Hey everyone, this is Wes.
God, I hate you so much.
I can't talk about video games.
Now, this is highly offensive.
It's very offensive. You're burning in hell for that.
Yeah, I'm going to hell for other things. Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month in which we just talk about various random games. It's a free-for-all. Anything is up for discussion.
Anything goes.
Yes. And I actually did, before we even start talking about any of the random games, I got a couple of things on the agenda. I'm going to go through the Club Nintendo games, and then I just wanted to get some of your general thoughts on bug Pokemon since you weren't able to join us for our second round of recording for the, with the bug rankings.
Yeah. Were you able to save the last
one? No, I was not. No, it was gone for good. Yep. Thanks for that, Sherlock.
Thank you. I
fantastic.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
So, and it was going really well too. It took us like a half hour to get through like the first 10, so it would have been a really long show. It ended up being a really long show anyway. Me and Ryan went on for an hour and 40 minutes.
Dear God.
Yes.
What's wrong with you?
There were a lot of other topics we brought up, and maybe I'll bring them up. But first, I just want to get through the Club Nintendo games really quick. These are now available for download for coins on Club Nintendo, and they are available until October 12th. Available now for download on the Wii U, you can get Mario Brothers. I believe it is the arcade version. It's not Super Mario Brothers. It's like the Mario vs. Luigi, and there's the POW block on the bottom, and enemies scroll down. Yeah, that one. And, I mean, that's...
What do you do?
Yeah, it's 200 coins, so if you're really into like the player versus player kind of stuff, I think if you are going to download Mario Brothers, you already know what it is, and you've probably already played it and enjoyed it. It's not a particularly deep game, but if you're good at it, it's fun to troll other people, which Ryan is very good at it, and whenever we play, we always have to quit after a few rounds because I get tired of losing. Also available on the Wii U or Club Nintendo game, you can get on the Wii U Virtual Console, Kirby Superstar for the Super Nintendo, also 200 coins, and it's a collection of Kirby games, which, you know, it is what it is. Thanks for showing up, Kirby. Once again, you get the participation award.
Yay!
And also, you can download on the Wii. And it's nice, because I mentioned this before, they used to not make a differentiation between getting on the Wii or the Wii U. They would just put Wii U / Wii. Now, these games, they're just being upfront about it and saying you can only get them on the Wii. You can get them on your Wii U, but only in Wii mode. You can't play them in Wii U mode, so you have to switch
over to Wii.
So, you can get Super Punch-Out for the Super Nintendo, 250 coins, which is pretty cool. Why not?
I think
out of all the ones we're going to talk about on the list, that one's probably the one most worth getting. Because, you know, it's Super Punch-Out. I think it's probably the most recognizable and probably the hardest to get now that I'm looking through the game. So this one's definitely worth picking up a digital copy of if you don't already have a physical one. And then also on the Wii, you can get NES Play Action Football just in time for football season.
Yeah, it's like get you in the mood. Yeah.
So to get you in the mood for real football, you can play this NES game, which is probably highly unplayable and probably does not have very much action in it.
Yeah, so awesome.
There are two true words in this claim. It's for the NES and it is some sort of facsimile of football.
There we go.
200 coins. I think I already mentioned that. Anyway. And then on the 3DS, there are a few different options. You can get Super Mario Brothers for the NES for 200 coins. So you can get Super Mario Brothers for the 10 millionth time, if you feel like it. Only this time it's sort of free, because it's only costing you coins.
We're being beaten to death with Super Mario at this point.
It always seems to be available in some form or another. It's always Super Mario Brothers. Here it is.
Please, again.
Buy it again. Give us all your money for this game that you've bought a million times before. And I like Super Mario Brothers. I've played it a bunch of times. I have it on the Wii Virtual Console. I'm not buying it again.
No.
I'm okay with my one copy of Super Mario Brothers. I don't need another one. Oh, and then I also have this game for as an ambassador. So I do have this game on my 3DS because I bought a 3DS at launch. And then you can, this other one I also have on my 3DS because I got it as an ambassador game, The Legend of Zelda for the NES.
There you go.
And that's 200 coins. And this one I think would be runner-up for my recommendation for downloading because it's a classic.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anyone says, this game has aged fine. If you think this game has aged badly, it probably means that you're just bad at it. So get better. And And there's also a couple of DSiWare games you can get on the 3DS. You can get Touch Solitaire for 150 coins. You can play some Solitaire if you feel like it. Or you can play it on your PC for free. And you can also get Pictobits. And Pictobits is probably one that I'm going to try out as well, because it looks like an interesting sort of puzzle art. I think it's like a, technically like an art style game, but I don't know if they're calling it art style at that point. But 200 coins for Pictobits.
I don't know why, but I just got this image of a little old lady yelling to her husband, "Honey, the computer comes with Solitaire!" She's all excited about it.
"It's a Solitaire!
Don't bother me with your damn computers!" "Trying to watch Pat Sajak in Wheel of Fortune." So, Wes.
That's a little tangent. That was
let's,
nice.
Let's talk about some bugs.
Let's talk about some bugs.
You don't have your list with you.
No, I don't.
That's all right. That's all right. We don't need to go through all 32 bug types again. Let's start off with, just like off the top of your head, who would you consider the worst?
The worst bug.
Who are the garbage Pokemon?
Ledian or Krikatoon. One of the two.
Yeah, definitely. Those
right off the bat.
Those are at the bottom of our list as well.
Easy.
Yep.
Easy.
And then, how do you feel about, a lot of like the early starters? Like if you were forced to pick an early bug, let's say Butterfree, Beedrill, Mothim, Beautifly, Dustox.
The best of them?
Yeah.
I probably would say, based on his location and game, Butterfree.
Yeah.
Because he's, if you start with Charmander, you have to grab Butterfree, pretty much. That or a Nidoran for a double kick.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how you're going to get through that first gym.
And it's interesting that, you know, you're talking about the first generation there against the Rock Gym. Yeah. It's interesting that Butterfree becomes a better option than your Charmander, because Butterfree is a bug flying double weak to Rock.
But it picks up that confusion, mm-hmm. so it actually can do some damage to
them. Yeah, that makes all the difference.
Before it explodes.
Right. And, you know, if you're lucky, and if you grind it, because, God, Butterfree is such a chore to grind in the early goings of the game.
Dear
God,
you put
your time into it. It definitely pays off. For that particular gem. Let's get your thoughts on Venomoth compared to Butterfree.
Venomoth, I say, is actually more usable than Butterfree.
I ranked him higher than Butterfree.
Better moveset and everything, but it's still not, like, significantly.
Mm.
I've used him Venomoth before in the original, and I did really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I keep going back to it, like, I'm sure this is going to be just as good as the first time. No, just no. No.
So what about doesn't hold up? Are you just not appreciating the bug poison combination?
Nah, it just for some reason just never seems to go as well.
It's me and Ryan brought up a point of discussion about the bug type combinations, and there's a lot of bug flying, there's a lot of bug poison.
Yeah,
and he brought up a conversation about realigning them as types. So if there were a particular bug Pokemon in your book, who like needs to have like a type change? Like become bug and something else, or just like go to just only bug?
Put me on the spot for that one.
Let me give you an example. One of the first ones he mentioned was Ninjask. And he would like to see Ninjask as a bug dark, which would be a really interesting type.
Yeah, but it just makes sense for him to be bug flying.
Bug flying?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess. I mean, like, see, there are some things where I don't understand why it would have to be bug flying. Like, just because...
He's flying.
Just because, like, it's in the air. I mean, I guess that's, like, their one prerequisite to be a flying type. But, I don't know, I guess because... Maybe it's because we've ranked them this way, but I kind of see flying types as more like birds. But I don't see why, like, say, Butterfree would have to be a bug flying. Beedrill flies, and he's a bug poison. So it doesn't necessarily
That's a good point. And then what would Butterfree be? Like Bug Psychic?
I would probably go Bug Psychic because its psychic moves are much more useful than its bug... Or, I'm sorry, well, probably even than its bug moves, but its flying moves.
Yeah, definitely.
One that I brought up, and actually one that isn't a bug that I think should be, is Haxorus. Should be a dragon bug.
I think that would be really cool.
That'd be a really awesome
type combination. I would use that hands down. Plus, it would give it a little more... range to the whole dragon types when it's all together.
It's true, because Dragon doesn't really, outside of legendaries, I'll throw that correction right away, it doesn't have very many type combinations. It's just either straight dragon, dragon ground, or dragon flying. I can't think of any other non-legendary dragon types in there. Where'd you put Shuckle?
Oh yeah, I'm not a big fan of Shuckle like
how
you are.
How dare you?
Reason being, I how do acknowledge you can do these cool little combinations and these cool little tricks and everything to do some cool stuff with them. It just takes too long. I just want to go in the battle, beat them up, leave. I don't want to sit there and waste 10 moves doing all this nonsense to get him ready so he can survive and whittle somebody down.
Sometimes
it just takes too long.
That. Sometimes you gotta take out Lance and you got a shit team except for Shuckle. Sometimes
well,
that
I mean,
happens.
Why would I put myself in that position?
One that Ryan brought up, I want to get your thoughts on it. Vespiquen. Vespiquen, he wanted to change to a bug psychic.
I don't know about that.
I guess maybe because it kind of commands, like it has a few exclusive moves where it commands Combees to do things. It like raises defense, heals it, attacks with them. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bug Fairy. That'd be an interesting type combo.
Yeah, Bug Fairy would be very interesting.
But one of the things we discussed a lot is like Volcarona and Galvantula, how they are bugs who have these secondary types that are pretty powerful staple types of the game in Electric and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird that it took them so long to pair bugs with these different types that aren't flying or steel or poison.
I'll say one thing I'm a little annoyed about is Pinsir, his mega form, making him a bug flying.
Ryan said the same thing.
Why weaken him? I don't understand.
Yeah, it's real strange. And especially
make it like Heracross, bug fighting in his mega form. That will work out perfectly.
More fighting moves than he does bug moves.
I'm not surprised.
So yeah, he should absolutely.
And how about this? Just getting rid of Ledian altogether. Just take him out of the game.
Or like or a third step, like a third evolutionary step for him and send Aridos.
Okay, that way they're not garbage.
Right.
Maybe
exactly.
It fixes their stats.
Yeah, because Aridos is actually a competent brawler, but has poor speed.
What do you think of Drapion, since the Skorupi starts as a poison bug and then becomes
Poison Dark,
yeah.
Was it?
Poison Dark.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not really a fan of... Well, actually, I think Drapion ranked decently high in my poison rankings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but that's okay. You're the tallest Mizrake.
There isn't a Bug Dark either.
That's true. There's no Bug Dark. That'd be a cool type combination. Bug and anything would be a cool type combination.
Yeah, pretty much.
Bug Ground.
Yeah.
Crustle. Or it should be like a bug. Well, Ryan suggested Bug Ground. I'm okay with it being a Bug Rock, though.
Yeah, I'm fine with it being Bug Rock.
Anyway.
That's fine. Yeah, it's just taking too long.
So should we talk about some games?
Let's do this.
Oh, wait. Who is your number one?
My number one was Skizzer. I just really like him.
Okay.
He's probably the one bug I've used the most. Him and Fortress. I used Fortress a lot because I really like
Fortress.
How
did Fortress do in your rankings? Did he rank pretty high?
Yeah. I put him... where did I put him? I don't know, like 6 or something like that.
Oh, wow. That is
I put him
rather
high. Just because I love him. He's just a really nice wall.
So, let me... We discussed your top 5 off the show, but it seemed to align almost exactly with me and Ryan, where you had Skizzer very high, Pinsir, Heracross,
yep.
Galvantula you had very high.
Yep.
Fortress is kind of an outlier compared to where me and Ryan had him. But
I like him. I used him a lot. I find him very useful.
I mean, we all had like our ones that were kind of incongruous with other people's picks. Like mine was Shuffle. Ryan had him like right at number 10. Which is pretty good. I had him at number 3. His one that was kind of an outlier, though, was Masquerain. He really likes Masquerain.
I don't know how.
It's because it gives you... He built a bug team, and it's because it gives you other types that you can play with it. So you can teach it a
like
water
ice
move
stuff
and ice move.
Yeah,
so.
What do you freaking do?
Yeah, its stats were not... mine ranked significantly lower than his, and its stats just don't justify... training it up to level 100 like he did. But yeah, it was it's a Pokemon that if it was actually a bug water as opposed to bug flying, it probably would have made a couple spots higher for me. 2 or 3 spots higher.
Yeah.
Just because it's an interesting type
its
combination.
Stats probably would be better as well.
Yeah, it would have been it would have ranked like higher than like Butterfree.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Well done.
You beat Butterfree. Here's a cookie.
Anyway, Butterfree was like right in the lower middle rankings. So, Let's move on. Let's talk about some games.
Let's do this.
So I got three games, all eShop games. A couple of them I actually talked about before on my very sad solo show, official show that I did a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry, buddy.
It's always so lonely. You got some stuff that you'd be able to throw out there as well. But why don't we start with The Fall on the Wii U eShop.
Okay.
This is a game that I talked about on my solo show, and I finished it, beat the game.
Well, I'll give my quick initial view of this.
Yes.
And then you can, since you actually played a lot more than the 10 minutes than I did.
Right.
It's very interesting. I just don't like the little flashlight you use to discover things.
Mm.
That seems very annoying to do. Pretty much you're this guy, this space suit, whatever, and you gotta wander around trying to get to a medical facility because the human inside the suit is, like, beat up and whatever
right.
from the fall. But it's just a straight platformer walking around. You shine this weird light to discover things and interact with things, so you have to figure out, oh, there's this alarm thing and there's a panel behind this fence. Well, how do I get this? Well, I can pick up this wrench to get this arm to reach the panel to get the key to go up the elevator to do like, dear God.
Yeah, there's procedural puzzles.
Yeah, like that's pretty cool, but I mean, I don't want to shine a freaking light everywhere. This is annoying. But I mean, it looked interesting, dark, gloomy, not a lot of detail to it. But at the same time, now and then you'll see like light shine on it. It looks really nice. Good background to it as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice looking game. And the flashlight, I'll agree, is more about creating an atmosphere or a form to the game rather than a function.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be like this super moody, ominous, foreboding. Like they do a really good job of establishing a tone to the game. A really superb atmosphere, both in its tone and also visually, like you mentioned. It's not very well lit, which is why they use the flashlight to make you look around at sometimes pretty disturbing images. Like, you got piles of like junk robots lying around in pieces. Others like crucifixes where there are people and robots hung on them.
Yeah.
Which is pretty disturbing.
Cozy.
Actually, one of the most like unnerving or creepy parts of the game is when you're going through... basically, the game is putting you through a series of tests to get you clearance into the next area, and you have to like do these chores for people, but they're not people; they're cardboard cutouts of people. And just like walking around and seeing them poorly lit, and then when you shine the light on them, you see like they actually have like drawn faces on them. It's really weird. And, like moving through this village inhabited by cardboard people, it feels very strange, and a lot of that is because it's very poorly lit. So
yeah, that seems really freaky. Yeah, creepy.
Yeah, but like you mentioned, the flashlight. I understand why in establishing that atmosphere, but as far as interacting, it's not set up in the best way possible. So I mentioned before in the last show, you're controlling it with the right analog stick, and you have to move it around to discover like little magnifying glasses. And that will like prompt you that there's something that you can look at or something you can interact with, something like that. Sometimes, and I mentioned this on a previous show, when you complete a certain task, a different one will appear in a place that you've like tread like three or four times over, looking for, hey, I found a secret door.
Oh, wow.
So for example, you'll find an item, you use that item, and in doing so, a place that you've gone back and forth four times, like a new magnifying glass will appear. And it doesn't happen a lot, so you're not always looking for it. So sometimes you'll be walking around like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. Then you'll start shining your flashlight again and realize, oh, hey, look, there's something new that I can interact with. And the one time I was in this one section of the game, and I guess the game wasn't properly cropped or adjusted for the particular, I guess for the Wii U or for my TV or for whatever the case may be. And you could just barely catch the edge of the box that the magnifying glass is in. And if I hadn't watched a video guide for that particular puzzle, I never would have known it was there. I was like, oh, well, great. It's the thing I can't see. That's the solution to my puzzle. Thanks. But, you know, not only, like, are the flashlight interactions a little weird, but also I didn't really care for the way you're using the shoulder buttons for a lot. You didn't get to see the combat because I discovered a game-breaking bug.
Yep.
So I didn't have
wonderful.
I didn't have the gun yet. I don't want to give away the solution to too many puzzles here, but in performing the action I was supposed to execute to get the gun, I ducked behind a box.
Well, first off, a magic gun appeared in your hand.
Yes, I ducked behind the box, and then all of a sudden I had a gun, and I was like, great, I have the gun. I guess I solved that puzzle somehow, which I forgot how to solve. And then I was like, cool, I have the gun, so I'll just go. And then I pressed the button that you press to hop over, like, an obstacle, like if you're ducked behind a box, and I fell through the floor.
Into oblivion.
Yes. And that was it. I couldn't do anything, so I had to, like, exit and reload, and it set me back, like, just, like, a few yards. So I didn't get set back that far, but I was like, I don't feel like solving this again, so let's move on and record. Yeah. But the gun controls are pretty similar to the flashlight controls, except because you're using the right analog stick to aim and it'll both shine your flashlight, except you have to press down on the right analog stick to toggle between the two.
Oh, that's annoying. And like, do you press once and the gun's out, and then you press again to switch back to it?
Right.
Okay, thank God. It's not like a hold thing.
No, thank God for that, because that would be cruel. Annoying to like try to aim with it while you're holding it down. That would be terrible.
That'd be cruel.
And then the fire button is the ZR trigger, and like the interact button is the R shoulder button. And I don't know why they couldn't use the same button for both. Like, why can't you just use the trigger button, which is the more comfortable button to reach? And it just depends on what mode you're in, whether you're shooting or initiating an interaction.
Oh, yeah, that seems annoying.
So I don't know why they decided to use two different buttons for that.
Likely it's not like a faster-paced combat game, because how many times am I going to sit there and like want to press that top button? Because I'm so used to using it constantly and be like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And there are a couple of points where you have to be quick about what you're shooting, but 99% of the time you can take your time with your aiming and stuff. So at least it has that going for it. So the story of the game is told mostly through interactions with this kind of bipolar operating system that you come across in a few areas of the game. So it's basically like the operating system of the facility you're in, like the welcome computer. And it has taught itself to talk more like a human. But there are certain points where it's responding to a question you have, and it's just like an automatic canned response. So it will say something like very official and then like correct itself or further explain in more like colloquial vernacular. Oh, polysyllabic. Check that shit out. That wasn't even in the notes. So, and you know, a lot of like the things that you're interacting with the game, like that operating system, explores themes of free will and purpose, and if these computers actually have free will, or if going against their programming defeats the purpose of them actually existing. That kind of stuff. And it does it pretty successfully. And it does that through like the lens of the laws of robotics, which a lot of sci-fi movies and books and things have touched upon.
I love the laws of robotics.
Yeah. So, and you know, which ones are getting priority, and how far can you push the limits of those other laws as a computer program before they are broken and you're going against your program? Like, how important is the number one law, like protect your human, and how far can you push the limits of the other laws before you reach that breaking point?
It's, cannot harm human or through an activity allow a human come to harm. The second one is must obey a command unless it conflicts with the first law. Third law is must protect itself unless it conflicts with the other two laws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if you go more into Isaac Asimov books, there's the zeroth law, which is, don't allow humanity to be harmed to itself, and it doesn't conflict with any laws. So if necessary, if let's say this guy is going to cause some kind of works and motions that will create harm to the human race and survival, this robot can kill this guy. Like, it surpasses the first law.
So how about this? If a robot built by a human were to achieve consciousness and therefore be able to do damage to the human race, and therefore by proxy the human race doing damage to itself, would it have to kill itself?
Pretty much.
Well, how's that for a paradox?
You need to read these books. They're freaking awesome.
I don't read books.
Yeah, I know.
So in the fall, there's we've talked, you know, we kind of danced around some of the puzzles, but some of the puzzles don't require much logic. It's just about using the right item in the right place. And sometimes you don't always think of it, of things being used in certain situations. There's a few puzzles where, you know, you're carrying around an item and like, oh, here's something that can interact with. And really, if you can't think of the solution, it doesn't seem logical to you, you just start trying to use everything.
Yeah, exactly. At a certain point. Use everything on everything.
So, and then a lot of times you just kind of stumble across.
One thing I do like is if you have an item and you use it to solve the solution and you don't need it anymore, they just get rid of it out of your inventory. Like the arm to get the key card.
Yeah, it doesn't clutter up your inventory. Yeah. Which is good because we've mentioned before that, you know, interacting with things and selecting your inventory isn't always the easiest thing to accomplish.
Yeah, and that way you're not using your arm on everything when you're like, oh, I'm all done with this completely.
Yeah, and that's not to say that all puzzles are like that. Some puzzles are actually very, very cleverly put together, but when all else fails, just start using everything everywhere.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's short. It's, you know, 2 to 4 hours, depending on how quickly you're able to move through the game. The combat, we've mentioned before, it's okay. It's cover-based. It doesn't hurt the game, which is good. I can't count the number of games that we've talked about on this podcast since we started, where it's a puzzle or adventure game at heart, and they fuck it up with bad combat.
Yeah.
The first one that comes to mind is Fragile Dreams. The second one is Lost in Shadow.
Yep, I knew you were gonna make a reference to that one.
Both of those.
I knew you were gonna do it.
But the final boss fight is really heavy combat base, and it's okay. It's not difficult, but it kind of, I don't know, when games do that, when this is a puzzle adventure game and the final boss is almost all combat, it kind of seems counter to what the game has been teaching you so far. But
one thing I found funny, yeah, was the I had this list of things I could do, but I can't use it because I don't have permission. It's pulling an other end moment. I'm, yes, like, really? That was the first thing that shot to mind when I saw that list. I'm like, oh, great. Other M all over again.
That's a good spot. But at least
we're going to die. Fuck protocol. I'm using my fucking abyssals. I don't give a shit.
See, you know, in other M, I can understand the gripe because it's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to do it because this guy says so. In the fall, the computer doesn't activate these different abilities because it doesn't have permission. It's a fucking computer. It, yeah, needs permission before it does these
that
things.
That makes sense.
And see, it'll start activating different abilities to allow you to do different things based on... It'll justify certain things. Well, the human's in danger. I need to get to the next area, so I'm going to activate this.
Mm. So you're breaking rules and protocol.
Right.
That's more... I can't accept that more than Other M. Other M is just like, what the hell? You're fighting... Aliens are shooting shit at you, and you have this big, nasty gun to use, but you're not using it because, I just can't do it.
The one that bothered me the most, because, well, see, sometimes the guns are justified.
You got sand in your vagina, Samus. Get over it.
Well, okay, so some of the stuff, like how you can't use your super bombs because, you know, you might harm something and destroy the station. Okay, I can let that slide. Why the fuck can you not use your fire shield? You're about to go into a lava area, and you can't use your fire shield until you defeat the boss of that area. Why? What is the harm in protecting yourself? What the fuck, game? And moving through that fire area, you're constantly having to like move quickly and pick up any energy you can because your health is constantly draining. And if you just call up the dude and it's like, hey, I'm surrounded by lava, can I activate the shield?
Super great.
If he said no, then you know it's time to get your ass off that station because that guy's a dick.
He is trying to kill you.
Yep.
Through inactivity.
Anyway. But The Fall is a game.
Yeah, it's
that
a game
we were talking about.
There you go.
It's $10. I definitely recommend getting it, especially if you like those kind of puzzle adventure games like Myst or Ribbon.
Don't bring up Myst after The Fall, your elevator moment.
It's so good. I got them right up there on the shelf display.
Are we going to mention your elevator moment?
Or I think we've talked about that before.
I think we should, John.
Just close the elevator. Just close the elevator. That's the solution. You know. Go ahead. Tell your elevator story.
No. We're good.
So you don't want to... I feel like we've already told most of the elevator story. You got stuck in Myst at the part where you...
No. That wasn't... Well, that was an elevator, but your elevator moment I'm talking about in The Fall.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well,
see,
I don't
that's
wanna,
actually
I don't
wanna, very relevant.
I don't want to give you the solution.
Oh, okay. That or you don't want to look like a dumbass. Which one is it, John?
You're telling me that you... No, hold up.
Mine's worse than yours. Mine's worse than yours. I'll admit that.
But before we even get to the elevator moment in the fall, I just want to point out that I had to tell you that you can go further left. That you can go further left. And that's where you use the items you just found. Like, okay, yeah, just okay. Go to the left.
Well, I did know there was more than left. Because the left's where I started, so I mean, I didn't know if it was...
How many platformers do you know now that don't have something in... Didn't you never play Donkey Kong Country? You always immediately go to the left, because there's a 1-up waiting right there for you.
All right.
Okay, let's move on. You want to bring up a game real quick?
Nah, it's all right. My games are games I've already played and have talked about in past podcasts.
Well, like
I started Xenoblade again.
Good.
Not far at all. About maybe... 10 to a half hour in.
How are you going to approach it this time? Are you going to try to do side quests?
I'm just going to grab my main team and say fuck it to the other guys.
Okay.
Which I'm still debating on my team.
Who are you thinking about?
Well, I got to have the sniper chick because she's a healer.
Yeah, she's your wild mage.
Got to have her with you.
Yeah.
And I got to use the dude. Man, I'm blanking on names right
now. You got to use Shulk. He's got the Monado.
He's got the Monado. Got to use that thing. And then I need a tank. So it's either going to be Dunban or the annoying guy.
Ryan. Hey.
Thank you.
But you know what?
On it.
You know,
it's better than Waka.
You know what? It's Ryan time. You know what time it is, Wes?
Ryan time?
You know what time it is. It's Ryan time.
Which one would you recommend in this between the two?
I like Dunban.
Dunban.
And I like Dunban because he's not going to draw as much aggro. You're going to have to play your aggro reduction with Shulk quite a bit. But Dunban can break... topple and stun all on his own.
Okay.
So, you know, that's you know, your primary strategy, especially against bosses. You want to topple.
What was your main team in that? Like, when you say, this is going to be a really tough fight, shit's going to hit the fan, I got to bring out my all-stars.
It probably was those three. Shulk, Dunban, and Sharla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, there were boss fights where, like, Melia was necessary, your black mage, and actually... That actually shouldn't be a big deal because they level up as you go throughout the game, so you shouldn't.
Yeah, they don't level up as drastically though, right?
They do all right.
Yeah.
Also, another team that I used a lot, and I guess we've already. God, this game is 2 years old.
We're spoiling the crap out of it.
A team that I used a lot toward the end of the game was Fiora, Shulk, and Sharla. Unless I wasn't.
See, that's just pure straight beat 'em up team. That's what that is. That's not really strategy. That's just hack and slash.
That's a speed team. And actually, a lot of times, I only brought out Sharla during a boss. I would just go Shulk, Fiora, Dunban, and that was an ass kicking team.
Yeah,
that was kill 'em quick and you know move on. Anyway. Are you going to be doing a lot of side quests, or are you just going to try to blast through it?
I never do as much side quests as you, John.
Do you mean all of them?
You're a psychopath.
Do you mean all of the side quests?
All the side quests.
Uh-huh.
But, I always do a little bit so I can level up and grind a little bit, get some good stuff, but I never go extensive on it.
A good way to also level up, not only, like you can do all right with side quests, but look around for all of your landmarks. Because that'll do a couple of things. That'll fill up your map, so you don't have any shroud anymore, so you can always tell, you know, where you are in relationship to everything else. And that'll also give you a ton of experience when you discover a new one. So okay. Find your landmarks, and that's a really good way to maintain your levels.
Okay.
All right, so should we move on?
Yeah, one thing I want to ask you, though, real quick.
Yes.
Because I remember last time when
I played
the game.
Let's talk about Xenoblade all night. I don't care.
Yeah, this is freaking Xenoblade. Last time I was playing it, I would have Ryan or Dunbay on my team, but I kept pulling aggro with Shulk no matter what. He just did too much damage. I mean, any pointers in cutting back the aggro on Shulk? Because that was my major problem. Shulk just kept getting his ass kicked.
I always had... I think he's got one or two arts where he will reduce his own aggro. Don't go too crazy with your Monado powers. Try to use like your back and side attacks a bit more. I mainly used Shulk, especially when Ryan was around, to break, because Ryan could topple. And then when you're doing that, and then also Ryan has a couple of skills that actually draw aggro, and you always want to keep those equipped to him because he'll use them. I don't know. I mean, there were times where Shulk would draw aggro. And, you know, sometimes if you've drawn too much, it'll stick with some melee ones and wait out the battle a little bit. But most of the time, especially if you got Ryan around, he'll draw most of your aggro for you.
Mm. So pretty much wait for a topple, and then the second they're braked, and then unleash hell.
Yeah, once they're toppled, you want to start hitting with your Monado powers. That'll do the trick.
That'll do the trick.
All right, so let's take a quick break and then come back with a couple more games. A few more games to get through. I'm going to start with Azure Striker Gunvolt, which is a 3DS eShop game, and this is also one that I talked about on my Sad Solo show.
It sounds badass already.
It is. And I'm at the final boss, unless they, you know, surprise me with another final boss after that. I wouldn't be too surprised about it, but it has some really satisfying moments when you play the game well, and it's mostly combat driven. So, a lot of times when you're... let me just get to the basic gameplay, which I talked about before, but since you're here. What you're running through the game, Mega Man X style, and you got your little gun that you use to shoot enemies. Except this gun does a really minuscule amount of damage. Just like your basic enemy, you would have to shoot it dozens of times to kill it with your gun. So...
And what's the point of that?
Exactly. So, when you shoot enemies with this gun, a target reticule actually appear over them, and you can increase it 3 stages. So the first time you shoot it, a blue target will appear over it, then it'll turn yellow, then it'll turn pink. And what that does is that will allow you to shoot electricity at them. So your character has this ability, and it's your main way of combating enemies. He creates like this shield of electricity around him. That's pretty wide around his entire body, and when you basically tag enemies with your gun, and when you do that, it will focus more energy or electrical energy on them. So you're killing them by shooting them a few times, then activating your electricity shield, and it'll zap them to death. And that does a ton more damage, clears them out a whole lot quicker. And the game The most fun of the game is tagging as many enemies as possible and just shocking them all at once and killing them all at once. It's pretty fun.
How long do they stay marked after you mark them? Like, does it wear off? Or?
A decent amount of time.
Okay.
Your basic enemies that you just encounter running through a level will stay tagged long enough for you to kill them. When you get to the bosses, you know, you'll have to re-tag them a few times as you're fighting them. But the game has quite a bit more content than I expected. Usually, like your Mega Man X games, you got like 8 bosses in a final stage. This is like 10 plus missions, which is pretty cool. I wasn't expecting nearly as much. And then also, not only does it have its main missions, but you also, as you beat missions, you unlock challenges for those missions. So on a mission that you beat, once you're finished with the boss of it, it'll throw you back out to like your root menu, where you can upgrade your equipment and things like that. And then you'll also be able to accept challenges for the missions you've beaten. For example, beat this level in 4 minutes, or beat this level without getting stuck behind any doors that are slamming shut, or shutters that are slamming shut, as they call them. That kind of thing. Or beat the level with a B ranking or higher. Beat it with an S ranking or higher, something like that. So there's, and some of them can get pretty difficult as you're getting into like the more difficult levels, trying to get them through them with the highest ranking, because not only do you have to do it quickly, but you have to be chaining combos together, defeating multiple enemies at once, that kind of thing. So there are different collectibles that you're supposed to get in order to get the best ending. There are in the 6 main stages, like, you know, like in a Mega Man game, Mega Man's in the middle and is surrounded Brady Bunch style by the different robot masters, and you select which one you want to fight just by selecting their face.
Yeah.
So there's something similar to that in Azure Striker, and except there's 6 of them, and in those 6 main stages there is a gem hidden, and you have to find them all in order to get the best ending. Or you can just go through the game and get the normal ending and then find them after you beat the final boss, which is probably what I'll do. And by that, I mean I'll probably just beat the boss and never find all the gems.
Not bother with it ever again.
Oh,
God, that's enough.
The advantage of doing challenges and trying to find all the collectibles is that it gives you more rewards at the end of levels. And those rewards, they give you, like, in the form of items, and you use those items to synthesize more equipment. Those equipment will give you different things, like a double jump, or take less damage, or you recharge your batteries, because your electricity that you use is on a battery, and there's, like, a different percentage that goes down as you use more of it. So you can conceivably beat the game with only the equipment you start with, but by upgrading your equipment, you're giving yourself a better opportunity to get through the game. So there's not really much platforming. I think the game is kind of characterized as an action platformer, like a Mega Man game, like you would think of a Mega Man game. But there's not really a whole lot going around on the platforming side of things. It's pretty much, you know, run down this hall, jump a couple of times, but most of your focus is going to be on killing the enemies. There are a few, like, platforming elements to it. Like, there are platforms that are magnetized, or they kind of float, and you move them by zapping them with your electricity, so you have to stand on it and use your electricity to get it to move. Or there are like bridges that you have to extend using electricity. When you stop zapping it, they'll slowly like go back to their original position, that kind of thing. But it's pretty light in the grand scheme of it. There's also like a level that's entirely dark, like they've done in Mega Man games before. And there are switches that you have to shoot in order to activate certain lights that will give you an idea for where you are. So there's a pretty decent level of variety. Like all the different levels have some sort of gimmick that reflects the robot master base, or the boss of that particular level. Like, a lot like Mega Man. And you can tell there's been a lot of comparisons to Mega Man, because it's probably the closest thing we've gotten to a Mega Man game in quite a while.
Man.
And I don't know. I guess like Shovel Knight is also pretty close, but you know, Shovel Knight definitely has a different feel. It's more its own thing. It calls back to a lot of things while still becoming its own thing, rather than this has a lot of callbacks to Mega Man. And I think they really wanted to make a Mega Man game, but they had to make this instead because
Mega Man's dead.
Yeah, Capcom killed him.
Yeah.
So bastards. It's a really solid little game. It's $15. It's the most expensive game that I'm going to be talking about, which is kind of funny because it's the one that I probably liked the least, but I still liked it. It's cool. Haven't finished it yet, but I'm going to be finishing it within the next few days, hopefully. But yeah, that's it's probably the last time I'll talk about it, unless something amazing happens at the end and I just have to play it again. Anyway. You got
I'm gonna make reference to the music that we're using in this podcast.
Yes,
because I did request this. We haven't found any of it yet, so hopefully this works.
It's on YouTube, right?
Yeah, sure, we can probably find it on YouTube. We can throw it in there.
Yeah, let's rip it
the
off.
The music on this podcast is from a band. I guess is really the best
a
thing.
A troupe.
I guess I haven't actually seen one of their shows or
a
anything.
Parliament of Bards.
I like that.
A parliament of bards.
That's really nice. If I ever start a band, I'm not going to call it that. I'm going to call it a parliament of bards. Actually, that's a really good band name.
The Parliament of Bards.
I like that.
It sounds like vaguely folkish alterna rock kind of style.
Oh my god, we're making this band. That's awesome. That's freaking awesome.
All right, I'll play the washboard.
It's called The Proto Men, which is pretty much like a rock music way of telling the story of Mega Man,
mm-hmm.
about the rise of the machines, about Proto Man and how Mega Man's like fighting them and everything like that. It's really freaking awesome. So we're gonna be playing some of that in this podcast.
Yeah,
and maybe future if we want to finish up the story. They have two albums to my knowledge. The first one is Story of Mega Man, and then the second album they came out with is a prequel. So it's just a story of Dr. Light and Dr. Wily.
I wonder, you mentioned these songs. How long are they?
I don't know. Obviously, you're just going to play however much of it you...
Maybe.
Without making it terribly long. Some of them can go on for a little bit.
Maybe we'll just stick one at the end.
Stick one at the end.
And just like make a serial out of this. Like at the end of every podcast, you get another section of the Mega Man story as told by this Parliament of Bards.
Yeah, okay. I'm okay with that. Okay. It's pretty cool. Let's do that.
So... the last game I have to talk about is Teslagrad, which came out on the Wii U eShop just a few days ago.
Which I did play a bit of this as well.
And I think I'm making good progress. I feel like I've made my way through a good chunk of the game. I don't know. This game could be like three times as big as I think it is, but I doubt it. It's a pretty hardcore puzzle platformer game.
Right off the bat... visually, it reminds me of A Boy and His Blob.
And that was... I never, like, drew that comparison, but that is actually a really good comparison.
It looks just like it. Like, I would have guessed it was made by the same people.
Yeah, the only thing it's missing is a hug button.
Pretty much. Which, I don't think that's something any game would be hurt if they added that. Yeah, I play Call of Duty more if it had a hug button. Like,
and you just started Borderlands 2 again. Why doesn't that have a hug button?
Exactly. That game is so insane with Mad Men. It should be like one crazy guy who just wants to love everybody.
Yeah. Why not? So, this game, unlike The Fall, which you talked about before, that one's an adventure puzzle game. This one is a platformer because most of the challenges you're trying to solve, you're doing by platforming, running and jumping, rather than using items in certain places. So... the basic setup is that you are this boy who has been kind of chased into this castle slash tower slash stronghold of some sort. Don't know why, but there it is. And you're able to move through this castle and gain more powers and power-ups that give you new abilities. It kind of sounds like Metroid, but it's not really a Metroid-style game because it's fairly linear. You're pretty much trying to move up this tower, and the way to move up it is kind of like take the branching off rooms that kind of circle you around. But pretty much you're moving vertically most of the time. And each room is really self-contained. You're not doing a whole lot of backtracking when you get new power-ups. You're always just moving on to the next room. So... Each room can be pretty large, even though it's self-contained. It's not like 1001 Spikes, which is a recent game where the levels are pretty small but very dense. In this one, the levels are pretty big and sometimes can be fairly simple, or, you know, there's some real head scratchers in there too. So far, I have three abilities with this little character. You get these magnet gloves pretty early on, and it uses the trigger buttons, the ZL and the ZR. One will punch blue, one will punch red, and you use that to change polarities of certain platforms or blocks. Or
you can use the... What's the top one?
Can you?
Yeah. You didn't realize that?
No.
You can use A for one color, and then the top one...
It's either Y or X, probably.
Yeah,
Y.
Yeah, I think it's Y for the other one. Sure. You didn't realize that?
Oh, that's nice.
And then the far left one is your dash. Yeah. Your bottom one is your jump.
Yeah, the dash, you also, that's the second ability you get. But I don't know.
Those ZR and ZLs got too confusing for me. So I just kept my fingers on the L and R and was using the other two.
Right, because it also maps your polarity shifts.
To your
shoulder buttons.
Yeah.
Which I kind of wish that maybe I can remap the polarity shifts to the face buttons, because I like using the triggers. I think they're in a more comfortable position than the shoulders. But yeah, I can understand wanting to just use face buttons rather than both sets of triggers.
Yeah.
But anyway, like we mentioned before, the teleport is your second power up that allows you just to kind of warp yourself forward a few yards.
Fox and Falco. And Smash Brothers, there.
Yeah.
That kind of warp.
Right.
Just quick little dash.
Right. How's it go again? Thanks for that.
It's and then I get a balloon laying air out. That's what that kind of sounded like to me.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? All right, go on.
So, and then the third one that I got is the hood, and that actually allows you to change your character's polarity, like we had alluded to a few seconds ago. So like your gloves can change polarity of platforms and allow them to move.
And even certain metallic enemies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Changing your own polarity will allow you to either repel yourself against like the same polarity or attract yourself to the opposite polarity. So it becomes most useful so far, because there are certain things that give off like magnetic waves, the waves go up.
Yeah, like a giant column of magnetic.
Right, and you use the same polarity to like propel yourself up that column. And it's a little, sometimes it's a little confusing how much gravity is affecting you and how much the reversing the polarity, like those magnetic waves are able to propel you. Most of the time, the gravity in the game is a stronger force. Mm-hmm. So if you jump and then activate your polarity shift,
and it'll fall ways before you start going back.
Right. And you'll start going back up very slowly. So, you know, there's always that to take into account. There are like little collectible things that you can get in the game. I'm not exactly sure what they do. They look like little pills, but I don't know. Apparently, there's a bunch hidden throughout the game. Don't know what they do, and I don't even like. There's no option screen to show you how many you've gotten either. So, most of like the option screens are pretty bare bones for this game. It doesn't show you a whole lot of how you progressed. I guess like the collectibles are the only things in order to track that, although there are like little side story segments, and the story segments are pretty funny. There is a pretty funny way of introducing story into the game. Like there are these rooms where like a little paper puppet play will go on, like a stage will open up and they're like little puppets and they interact, and so far like there's like this old wizard looking dude and this king looking dude, and the king left the wizard and went to go conquer and lost all his men and then had to go back to the wizard all dejected. And so far that's the only thing I've seen of story. Yeah. I guess maybe it'll relate to the boy in some way at some point, maybe, perhaps. But
he's the king's son or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But other than that, there's not really a whole lot going on in terms of the presentation of the game. It's pretty much, hey, here's your next room, here's the next puzzle. Try to get through it. There is a map on the gamepad, which is great. I love maps.
That's good. No, you're a big map guy.
Sure am.
That one boss room that wasn't a boss room.
Yeah, that was strange because it was on the map. It like had the icon like you were about to fight a boss there, but
it was just a giant like bull statue.
Yeah, I guess Because that, like, once you like got to the other side of the room through solving the very confusing puzzle, you press the switch and I guess the door opened and you got to leave. Like, all right, well, I guess I have to fight that guy.
Yeah, there you go. You just beat Bowser on the bridge.
but there were a couple of boss fights that I fought so far, and there's actually one really good one where you're fighting this metal pterodactyl thing, which is a pretty cool boss
fight. I'm intrigued already.
I'll tell you, I don't want to spoil it because there's a...
Can I take a guess?
Yes.
You hit him, reverse polarity, and make him crash into the ground.
It's not too far off. It's not too far off. You're not making anyone crash. But yeah, at that point, you have your teleport and your polarity, your magnet gloves. So you're using both of those things in order to fight that boss, which is pretty cool that they're so far... except for that one boss fight, which wasn't a boss fight, they've incorporated all of your abilities as you go in order to solve them. Because it is more about like solving the boss rather than just beating the shit out of them, which is good. It reflects the style of the game. So...
At the last boss, right out front of the front, right outside the boss room, the door... You're going to pick up a machine gun. You're just going to go in there and go
God bat damn it. Crazy. It'll switch to a third-person cover shooter.
Yep.
And, yep. Anyway. So you mentioned the visual style, like A Boy and His Bob. It's a nice style. It animates really well. It's very fluid. The puzzles are pretty straightforward. They rely mostly on your platforming skill rather than... I guess like your ability to deduce solutions. Yeah. Yeah. Or there are a couple ones that, you know, you have to use different elements in the room in creative ways. Like you have to use an enemy in a creative way in order to make your way through it. But a lot of times, like I'd say like 60-70% of the rooms, it's, you know, use your teleport correctly, use your magnet gloves correctly to move platforms around and make your way through it. So, there are some that are a bit abstract, or if like you're not moving through the room correctly, I'm trying to dance around specific puzzles here. If you're not moving through the room quick enough, you're not going to spot something that happens in order that gives you a solution to a puzzle. In my notes here, I mentioned that I'm stuck on a robot puzzle. I'm not stuck on that one anymore. I figured it out because I went to the other side of the room and actually saw something happen. I was like, oh, something happened there. I can make it happen over here too. And then I had a solution. So sometimes, like, if you're stuck on a particular puzzle, try leaving the room, going back in and approaching it differently. There's lots of checkpoints, which is generous.
Very generous.
Pretty much every room is a checkpoint, and the larger rooms will have midway checkpoints as well, which is good. I already mentioned the map on the gamepad. Oh, one of the weird things is that right now there's no Miiverse support, like in terms of posting screenshots, which is unfortunate for a puzzle game because a lot of times, especially on Miiverse when the game is new, if you're stuck on a puzzle, just post a screenshot and say, hey, can anyone help with this? And people, sometimes they'll be able to give you just hints to let you come up with a solution with yourself. And a lot of times if they're just giving you the straight solution, they'll put a spoiler tag on there, which is nice. So it's unfortunate this game doesn't do that yet, but the developer has said that they're working on a patch or a solution to allow you to post things to Miiverse.
Yeah, because that Lay's puzzle that we got to, that's weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to approach that one, because it doesn't seem like there's a different direction we can...
Yeah, it seems like what we're doing is the way to do it, but it's just not working.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's a fun game. It is $10. I recommend it.
I recommend it too.
Yeah. I don't know if it is available on any other systems, but I don't care. I think you should play it on Wii U.
Yeah. Screw those guys.
So, any other games that you want to bring up before we close it out here?
That's all right.
You sure?
Yeah. What am I going to say about Borderlands 2? I'm playing the Necromancer.
I don't know what that
is. She's psychotic.
Okay.
She summons a giant robot that flies around and beats people up.
Okay.
A lot of fun.
All right, well, then we will... Good story.
Good story.
We'll close out here. Next week is going to be the Super Nintendo.
Super duper? What are we playing?
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, dear God.
And Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I'm actually...
Ooh.
The Zombies Ate My Neighbors, I'm looking forward to. My cartridge is on the way. And Mortal Kombat, I am really looking forward to just digging into that game harshly. But it's worth talking about because it's an important game.
It is very important.
It's a game that is highly recognizable and that a lot of people loved for some reason. But I'm really looking forward
to it. As the years went,
yeah,
it got gorier and gorier to the point where it's just plain disgusting.
Yep. And yeah, I'm looking forward to tearing it apart.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we will wrap it all up with the official show at the end of the month. And then start it all back up with the Pokemon show in, what's the next month after September? October. Yeah.
Yeah.
Till then, everyone.
So long.